It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins. Game over! Franco wins it!
He got it! He pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 291. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies website, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we've got a lot to get to here on episode 291. Unfortunately, the Phillies were swept for the first time this season at the hands of the Dodgers in Los Angeles. If you're going to get swept, I guess getting swept by the best team in the National League is the one you want it to happen to. But Phillies did not look good on the first three games of their six-game West Coast stretch here. So we'll get into that. We'll talk about the Phillies making their first major acquisition of the season, and it's probably not going to be the last one. Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell, as of midnight this evening, as I'm recording this on Sunday night, will become a draft pick compensation free. So we can expect those two guys to be off the market pretty soon. Are the Phillies going to be interested? If not, we'll take a look at some teams who probably should give up on the season relatively soon, and we'll rifle through their rosters and see if there aren't some folks that might be of interest to the Phillies via trade. And joining me, as he does every Sunday night for Hittin' Season, is the head guy at The Good Fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin Clue, how are you, my friend? How's it going?
You know, this is typically a point where your morale is low and despair sets in, but I'm finding myself particularly unbothered by this series, despite the fact that I think it's because it didn't really tell us anything we didn't already know. You know, yeah, they lost all three games, but they lost them in the fashion that you would expect the Phillies to lose to the Dodgers. I wasn't expecting them to lose all three games, but if you said they're going to, I would have guessed it would have been in this fashion. So there's nothing. Yeah, I don't feel like there's more nasty surprises in store for this team. I think we know how they need to improve moving forward, and hopefully we see that. So I wouldn't say I was, you know, excited to see this, but I certainly wasn't, floored.
No, I wasn't either. I think, you know, this is obvious. The Dodgers are obviously the best team in the National League right now, and the Phillies came into this series trying to see where they measured up with the Dodgers, and at the moment, they have been left wanting just a little bit. But before we get into this series and we really break it down and talk about some of the things we saw and some of the things that we were encouraged by and some of the things we were discouraged by, Liz Rocher will not be joining us on the podcast this week. You may remember she joined us for the first half of the podcast last week, episode 289, but as we were in the middle of recording, she had to abruptly leave because she lives in the Dayton, Ohio area. And if you listen to the most recent episode of Continued Success, Justin, I know you mentioned exactly what the issue was. Of course, Liz had a very damaging tornado, just narrowly miss her apartment. At the time, you know, when she left us, Justin, for that episode, we were not thinking a whole lot of it because, you know, how often do you think a major tornado is going to strike the house of your podcast partner on a Sunday?
Hopefully rarely. Hopefully no more than one time.
I hope that was our limit. Yeah, I totally agree. And so Liz sent us a little message. She wanted to say hi and just kind of let you know what's going on. So I'm going to play that for you here. A message from our own Liz Rocher. Here you go.
Hello, everybody. Liz Rocher here. As you may have noticed, last week I had to jump off Hittin' Season pretty quickly. There was a tornado coming through the area, and at the time it didn't seem like it was really all that serious. About 15 minutes after I jumped off, it actually went by our house. It missed hitting our apartment complex by, we guess, probably less than 1,000 feet. Me and my fiance are both okay. Our apartment complex, our building, and many others have since been condemned. We're living in the basement of a friend. So it's going to be a couple of weeks before I get back to a Hittin' Season and Continued Success. I wish I could continue recording, but until we find a permanent place to live, unfortunately, I'm going to have to bow out. God willing, I'll be back in less than a month. But yeah, I will miss all of you guys. Thank you to everyone for your support. I've gotten a lot of kind, generous emails, texts, tweets, Facebook messages from people who have read my work over the years. I really can't tell you how much it means to me. To the people who donated to the GoFundMe, it was incredibly overwhelming, excuse me, to see the support. So I can't thank you all enough. I should be back with you soon. If you happen to have any more generosity in you, please visit tinyurl.com/gemcityrelief. My fiance and I were not the only ones affected. There are entire swaths of Dayton that literally look like a bomb was dropped on them. It's unrecognizable. So if you have any generosity left in you, a couple of dollars to spare, tinyurl.com/gemcityrelief. That is a GoFundMe that has been set up by the Dayton Young Black Professionals Group. They're a group that I know that I've worked with. They're excellent. So anyway, thank you all so much. Go Phillies. And also, I hate the Jay Bruce deal. I hate it. I don't care what anyone else says. I hate it and I hate him. All right. Thanks, guys. Go Phillies.
So obviously, Justin, we're very thankful that Liz and her fiance, Sean, managed to get out of that unscathed. Unfortunately, they are dealing with a whole mess of nonsense right now. But again, if you didn't hit up her GoFundMe page, make sure you do that. It's on her Twitter timeline, at Liz Rocher. But as she said, there are also some other people, you know, just you could submit some funds to a larger group that can help out the whole Dayton community and the surrounding areas, because that was an area that was really devastated by a tornado. And I can't imagine what Liz is having to deal with right now, because it's quite a mess there in Ohio. But I know, Justin, we're both looking forward to her coming back, hopefully in a few weeks or so.
Oh, yeah. I don't have the intelligence to shoulder the load of two co-hosts. So, yeah, I very much look forward to Liz's insights rejoining the program.
Absolutely. So in the meantime, we'll do our best to muddle along until we welcome Liz back to the podcast. And we'll talk about this series sweep at the hands of the Dodgers. And as I mentioned, this is the first time the Phillies have been swept this season, and it took until late May, early June, which is saying something. I think that's good. The Phillies are 33-26 on the season. Their lead in the National League East has shrunk to just one game ahead of a three-game series coming up against the San Diego Padres. However, the Phillies kind of were I don't think they were outclassed in this series necessarily. The run differential is going to look bad, 18-6, but seven of those runs came in the bottom of the eighth inning in the series finale. Each of these games were pretty taut contests. But the Phillies never held the lead in any of these games. And you know, it just felt like the Dodgers were like the big brother holding the little brother at arm's length, and the little brother's trying to land a punch, but just can't seem to connect. And I think the big problem in this series, the pitching, Justin, I thought was pretty good in this series. Arrieta wasn't awesome, but he kept the Phillies in the game. The bullpen kept the Phillies in the game for the most part in the series opener on Friday. In the game on Saturday, they had a chance to win. Bryce Harper hits a huge two-run home run in the eighth inning to tie the game up, and Hector Neris gives up a home run to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in the bottom of the ninth inning for the walk-off home run by Will Smith. And you know, in the game on Sunday, it was a 1-0 game all the way until the bottom of the eighth inning, when it just felt like the levees broke. You know, the Phillies just didn't have any more fight in them. The defense fell apart. The bullpen finally gave way, and everything kind of erupted. And the 8-0 final makes the game look a lot worse than it actually was. It was a 1-0 game up until the Dodgers' final at bat. So when you take a step back away from this game, Justin, I know you just mentioned that it wasn't terribly disturbing. I agree with you. I'm not terribly disturbed by how this series went. I don't think there were a lot of surprises in this series, but I think we were hoping just for at least one win out of this. What's your big takeaway? What are some of your big takeaways from this series, however?
Well, like I said, the outcomes weren't completely surprising. So, I don't feel too negative about it. It's just I wound up looking at it like, all right, what if any of the alternatives had happened? So if they had won one game, we would have been disappointed, but not upset. Something about winning that last game of a series after dropping the first two makes it feel like they'll carry some kind of momentum into the next one, or give you a reason like, all right, look, they are capable of beating the Dodgers. I know I don't want to cross sports here, but I know watching the Sixers all season, it was, they have teams they just seem like, you know, they can't get past. It's when they like lose season series to teams, and you just feel like, look, yeah, they're going to win, you know, down the line, they're going to have to face this team again. And that's exactly the kind of dynamic the Phillies are going to have with the Dodgers here. So, you know, if they had won one, we would have been able to tout Pivetta's appearance against the Dodgers, which is a big deal. It's going to get lost, like you said, in that 8-0 score. But his start today against the Dodgers was probably the most surprising part of this series for me.
Yeah, and most encouraging, very, very encouraging start from
absolutely. Or depending on which game they won, we'd be talking about how this team never gives up, and Bryce Harper is a late inning hero for hitting that home run in game two. If they'd won two games, it wouldn't have mattered what happened in the third, because we would have been talking about that they won the series. And if they'd swept the Dodgers, I mean, damn, we would be marking down the parade route now.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, the alternative happened. They didn't win any games, which is obviously the least positive outcome. The offense didn't show up really today. I used the word broke, that they looked broke. I on Twitter today, I didn't mean that they looked broke, like they were broken by this series and were not going to be able to recover. Just more like this team has a tendency to look like it's got sparks flying out of it on occasion, or it's just like shutting down, like you said, like it's mm-hmm. broken because it's not working. And that's kind of what they looked like. I don't, 1-0 late in the game. Yeah, it's like they're still, that feels less to me like they're still in it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're still, it's not an insurmountable mm-hmm. lead, but they haven't scored all day in a series where they've already lost two pretty devastating games. Well, at least the second game was a little more devastating than the first. So the offense didn't show up today. Pitching didn't help, and the bench still needs a boost. So nothing happened that a trade for Jay Bruce makes me think this team has solved its biggest problem. But, you know, that being said, this is still a good team. I still feel like it's a good team. I think a lot of people still think it's a good team. It's just the same kind of good it was when the weekend started. Solid up front, capable of surprising you, but flimsy and behind its surface, and kind of easily knocked down. So we've seen them sweep mm-hmm. teams during this. I think this long stretch of competitive teams they're facing is finally over now.
Yeah, they went 10-10 during the 20-game stretch that we were talking about. So
that's that's so frustratingly perfect, I think. You know, that we've seen them. They've swept teams. They've swept good teams during this stretch. They've lost series. They've won series. They've won on the road. They've won at home. They've gotten swept now. Like, they've pretty much done every single kind of thing you can do, and they're still a good team. You know, at the end of it, they went 10-10. They've got the same winning percentage that they went into this stretch of games with. So, I think it's clear now they've got some improvements to make, and Bruce kind of signals the beginning of those changes coming. And like you said, the draft pick being lost is no longer a part of acquiring Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrell, so that puts that more into play. So yeah, I think this team knows how it needs to improve, and it will improve moving forward, and hopefully the next time they play the Dodgers, they'll be a better team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the next time they play the Dodgers in Philadelphia, I think mm-hmm. the Phillies will be
a different
juice.
Series.
It will. It'll be a different mm-hmm. series entirely, because the Phillies have more juice at home. And for whatever, and that's not unusual. Most teams play a little bit better at home. But, you know, I think and we'll get into Jay Bruce in more detail in just a second. But just looking at the offense, that to me is the bigger problem right now. And mm-hmm. there's not a whole lot you can do to go out and solve it. It's the reason we talk about the pitching is because there are options out there that can help the Phillies improve the pitching. Whether you're talking about Keuchel or Kimbrell, there are more options in the trade market for pitching than there are for bats, because the Phillies made all of their offensive additions in the offseason. There's nowhere really, unless you're going to go get a full-time third baseman, there's really nothing out there where you can improve yourself more than what you've already done. It's kind of on the guys already here.
Yeah.
to be more consistent. And I think that's what's a little bit concerning to me. And by concerning, I don't mean like I'm so worried we're never going to score runs. It's one of the annoying things about the team at the moment, because we haven't really seen them put three or four really good offensive games together yet. I mean, they'll have a game like they did last week against the Cardinals where they bash a bunch of home runs, and then they're quiet for four straight games. And I think that's the other part of this 20-game stretch, them finishing 10-10, that feels a little disappointing, is that they were 10-6 after 16 games, and then they've lost four in a row. And you know, I think going into this Dodger series, we knew it was going to be a real tough test. But you know, anytime you're facing Kenta Maeda, who always has the Phillies number, and Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill, these are three really good starting pitchers. They've shut a lot of teams down. But if you're a team that thinks that you have an elite offensive unit, and really, if you've got McCutcheon, Segura, Harper, Hoskins, Real Muto, Cesar Hernandez, and then a couple other guys at the bottom of the lineup, it's disconcerting to me that you have your OPS on the road is 11th out of 15 National League teams right now. And even at home, their home OPS is only 7th out of 15 teams. They're really just kind of middle of the pack. They've been out-homered this year 91-67. They are among the least amount of home runs as a team in baseball so far this season. 23rd in home runs in Major League Baseball this year. And so, I mean, I don't know any other way for it to be solved, for this to fix itself, other than for the hitters to just do better. And I know that sounds stupid, but, you know, I don't know what John Mailey can do as the hitting coach. I don't know what John Mailey does as the hitting coach, because we're seeing the same issues with this offense that we saw with last year's offense. You know, they're not generating enough home runs per fly balls. I mean, they're hitting fly balls at a reasonable rate, but not, like these last four games, and especially like that last game at Citizens Bank Park against the Cardinals on Friday, the ball was flying out if you got it in the air, and the Phillies just couldn't elevate the ball. That seems to be a thing with this team, is they're trying to generate runs through a lot of singles and doubles. And this weekend against Los Angeles, I don't know if you noticed this also, they seem to hit into every shift. Like, the Dodgers seem to know where to be positioned for virtually every Phillies hitter. And every time the Phillies hit a ball hard, it was right at somebody into a shift. And so that's just kind of the way the Dodgers play. They're a really smart organization. They have really good offenses, but I mean, really good pitching and a good offense, obviously. The offense for the Dodgers gets talked about more than anything else. But the Phillies offense, that to me is the worrisome part. That's the thing that really needs to get fixed in order to cover up for a bullpen that's missing a lot of guys, and for a starting rotation that I think, you know, has actually done pretty good over these last few weeks. So, where are you on the offense right now? I mean, is this an offense you think will get going at some point this season, or is it going to kind of be like you said, with sparks flying out of the back?
No, I think it's definitely going to get going. I think that's got to be the difference, because yeah, it's fun to watch a team, like you said, hit a bunch of home runs all at once. But what this team needs to do to differentiate itself from last year, which it supposedly had done so by acquiring so many better players, is sustain that sort of production over time, not just explode for a Saturday and then see you on Thursday. Like that's not gonna help anybody. It's certainly not gonna get them the wins they need to stay in first place, and it's certainly not gonna beat a team like the Dodgers. So yeah, I think this is a team that's, the ceiling is certainly higher than last year, but yeah, if they can't get going, then yeah, it's like, yeah, there's some high profile, more recognizable guys on this team, but they're going to end up with the same fate. That being said, I just still don't feel like that's likely. I feel like the guys on this team are too good and too proven to fall apart or to shut down for that much time, and to the point that we're actually comparing them to the 2018 team. So yeah, I think you're right that acquiring somebody from outside the organization right now, that also reminds me too much of last year when, like, in August and September, suddenly we're just seeing these Cabreras and Bautistas and Justin Bors thrown into the mix, and you didn't even know what they were supposed to do or be, and they're displacing guys, and now nobody knows when they'll be playing or where they'll be playing, and it's like it's all for this point of producing offense that never showed up. So I think that's the difference this year, is that this is a team that's got a lot of guys locked into playing time in certain positions, and the idea is they're there because they can produce and they will produce. Even when some guys aren't, other guys can cover for them. But there's no reason to go out and start tinkering and start making guys wonder, like, okay, but, you know, but where, but when, but like, should I expect to see myself in the lineup today? I think to establish consistency, which is what this team needs, you got to just trust that it's going to, that the offense is going to come, and it's going to. I really do. I really do think that we haven't seen them shut down. It's not like this has been all year that they show up one day and then shut down for a week. It's definitely been there. They've managed to put together some hot streaks. They're in first place, you know, like this, clearly they've done enough to establish themselves, but at the same time to avoid that fate, I don't think you got to tinker as much. I think pitching is where you got to help, because we've seen a lot of games where the bullpen has blown the lead. We've seen a lot of games where the starting pitching just didn't stand up and gave them like what, 2, 3, 4 innings, and the offense didn't really have a chance to get going. But we have seen the offense bail out pitchers throughout the season. So I feel like the offense is strong enough. I feel like you can look away from that now if you're the person tasked with making this team better. And I think the first thing you should be doing, you know, Jay Bruce, okay, that was a fine deal. It didn't really cost the Phillies anything, and it did address that their bench is weak. And like I said, they don't have a lot of depth. So that's a good move. But I feel like if you're going to make this team better, you have to address the pitching, and I'm sure they're going to do that. So just try that area first. Give them some more options, either in the bullpen or in the rotation. You know, get into a rhythm here with more consistent, good pitching. Give guys like Aaron Nola the chance to fall into the groove we know that they're capable of. And then that offense, the offense is going to do its job. I do think that's how it's going to play out. That being said, you know, I do feel like we've had a conversation like this before this season, and more than once, that we're just like waiting for players we know are good to be good.
Well, and let me ask you, because if it is carrying over that same theme from one season to another, I have a lot of people on my timeline. I'm sure you've had people on your timeline mentioning John Mailey, and you know, what does John Mailey do? I don't really know what the hitting coach does, especially when you're talking about a bunch of veteran players that you've brought over. You know, John Mailey is not, I don't think anyway, reworking, you know, Andrew McCutchen's swing or Gene Segura's swing. And until this weekend in Los Angeles, all those guys were doing pretty well. We were talking a lot about McCutchen and Segura and how great they were doing before coming into Los Angeles. So I don't want to let one 3-game series against 3 really good pitchers and the best team in the National League to throw everything into chaos. You know, it's no time to panic or anything like that. And I'm not calling for anybody to be fired. I don't know what, you know, I really don't know what a hitting coach does to help a veteran group of hitters like this, you know,
like
so
Bryce Harper or even like Phil Gosselin watching a 1-2 pitch come right down the pike, or Bryce Harper watching like a 95 mile an hour fastball right down the middle of the plate. They're not going to go into the dugout and have John Mailey like perform some sort of baseball baptism or magic spell on them that's going to make them swing at that pitch next time.
Right.
Like he can't be in their ear for every pitch. And that's what it's come down to with a couple of these guys, that they're just like, you know, they're just not swinging when they should swing. You know, when it comes down to something as simple as that, the hitting coach's overall philosophy about hitting isn't going to change anything. So, again, not calling for anybody to be fired. I get why people turn to the hitting coach, because it's like a casualty. It's an unseen casualty. People don't really know the hitting coach very well. They're just in their minds. It's like, oh, he's in charge of keeping the offense going, and the offense isn't good right now. I feel like that would be a purely ornamental gesture at this point.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I'm not. I don't think that makes a whole lot of sense, because I don't think it'll fix anything. You know, we've seen you know, when Milt Thompson got fired and Greg Gross got fired back in the, you know, it just doesn't really fix anything. These guys just have to hit a little bit better here. Let's talk about Nick Pivetta real quick here. And I think that Pivetta coming back in, you know, we touched on him just a second ago, but 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 9 strikeouts, just 82 pitches through 6 innings. He probably could have gone deeper into this game, but he had to be removed for a pinch hitter in the top of the 7th inning when the Phillies had runners on first and second with 2 out, and they used Phil Gosselin off the bench too. And they had no choice. I mean, you know, it's Phil Gosselin, or I don't know if Sean Rodriguez had come into the game at that point yet. I don't think he had, but I mean, that's, you know, what kind of an upgrade are we talking about there? And it's Rich Hill on the mound, so you're not going to use Nick Williams in that situation. So you roll the dice with Phil Gosselin. Gabe Kapler had to do that. He had to try and score. And it was a nothing-nothing game at the time. He had to try and get on the board, and it didn't work out, obviously. But Nick Pivetta just had his best game of the 2019 season. This is breakout Nick Pivetta. This is the guy we thought we might see more of this year when he was pitching like this in spring training. And the fact that he did this in Los Angeles against one of the most fearsome hitting teams in the National League, in the Dodgers, was really impressive. And if we're not focusing on the fact that this team lost three games and, you know, lost three games of a 162 game marathon, and we're looking at the bigger picture, maybe looking at this as Nick Pivetta's game where he kind of breaks out moving forward, that's, who knows if that's going to happen. We're talking about Nick Pivetta, a terribly inconsistent starting pitcher, but you see that it's all there. He was throwing mid to upper 90s in the game today. He had his curveball working tremendously in this game against the Dodgers. They had no chance against his stuff. This is why Nick Pivetta drives people crazy. This is why people like me want to see Nick Pivetta in the starting rotation, because the stuff is so tantalizing. It's you can see what he can do against the very best starting lineup in the National League. And so I guess I wonder what your thought is on Pivetta's performance and what you think it might mean going forward.
Yeah, I feel like I can't make every pitching start for every pitcher on this rotation mean something this year. I feel like there's been so much inconsistency that it's tough to trust anyone. And every time when somebody has a good start, it's like, oh, is this the turnaround? Yeah. I'm like, let's just let him turn around if he's turning around. Let's just see if that is what happens. Right now, let's just celebrate the fact that Nick Pivetta shut down the best offense in baseball, in the National League at least. Like, that's impressive enough. And it is, it's exciting. And that he struck out Cody Bellinger, and that it was like, and that he really, it wasn't just like, oh, he held the Dodgers to a couple of runs. No, he shut them down. And if you had to guess one pitcher in this staff was going to be the stopper for the Dodgers, never would have guessed.
Would not be Nick Pivetta.
The problem is, as it was last year across the board, is like you said, the word inconsistency. And that is a symptom of youth. And there's supposed to be more baseball maturity on this team than there was last year. There's supposed to be more guys with another year of experience under their belt. There's supposed to be more guys who are stabilized and calibrated and ready to pitch in the major leagues. Maybe this was Nick Pivetta making that statement. If the Phillies had won this game, it would have been a hell of a lot easier to read.
Yeah, big celebration.
Statement. So, I'd say the Phillies have really had to piece together their pitching staff because of injuries, because of a lack of effectiveness as the season's gone on. But, obviously we said before that wasn't the last we'd seen in Nick Pivetta. We certainly are going to see him again. And hopefully this success continues. I feel like if he's made adjustments to get his breaking pitches working, to get his command under control, that's a pitcher I want to see again. But it's always touch and go with Nick Pivetta. And I've been hurt too many times to trust him.
Guard your heart. You got to guard your heart when you're talking about Nick Pivetta. It's just one start. That's really all we're looking at here. But again, it was great to see him do that, because it's nice to know that pitcher is in there somewhere. One other thing about the series we should talk about real quick, and that is the opener that the Phillies used on Saturday. And I am not a fan of the opener. I don't like it as a tactic, as a way of filling out your rotation once or twice through the rotation every single week. But in this situation, with Zach Eflin hitting the injured list and the Phillies having to kind of figure out, cobble together a group of pitchers on the fly for Saturday, this was essentially a bullpen game, which has happened before in baseball. But the Phillies used Jose Alvarez for the first two innings in order to get the Dodgers not to load up all of those dangerous left-handers, 1 through 6 in their order. And it was a very different looking Dodgers lineup with Jose Alvarez pitching those first two innings. The second inning was a little shaky, but he got through the first two innings unscathed. You had Juan Nicasio pitch to David Freese to lead off the third, and then Cole Irvin came in for a few innings, and he pitched pretty well. Vince Velasquez came in after that, and he pitched okay. That was unfortunately a game in which Hector Neris allowed that walk-off home run to Will Smith. Not a terrible pitch by Neris, but also not a great pitch. Neris has been so good this year, it's hard to criticize him for giving up a home run. But nevertheless, the opener worked, and in this situation, I couldn't blame Gabe Kapler for doing that at all. It was a smart way to kind of, I think, approach this game on Saturday when he knew he didn't have a real starter to go to, and you knew you had a Dodgers lineup that was just loaded with great left-handed hitters. I thought it worked really well, and I can see, I think I like this as a strategy implemented rarely, kind of like a break glass in case of emergency type of situation, not as something I want to see every once, you know, twice per five times through the rotation. But on Saturday, it worked.
Yeah, I think it'd be crazy to think that Gabe Kapler wasn't going to eventually find a time to use the opener. That just like it made too much sense. And he got to do that. He got to reach into his toolbox and think about matchups and fiddle and use his bullpen. And like, oh my gosh, it was a chess game. Like, beautiful. I don't think this is something they should be employing on a consistent basis, but it just sort of wound up being a perfect storm with Eflin hitting the injured list and, you know, being in need of a pitcher, not having a pitcher, and also facing the Dodgers. Like, let's think about this strategically. Let's put the pieces out there that we think are going to be the most effective against a team that, you know, is capable of beating just about anybody. And they did that. And I think that's the whole idea behind having Velasquez and Irvin in the bullpen, right? Like to have guys who are capable of starting, who can give you a few more innings, which is, again, another favorite thing of the Phillies, to send relievers out for more than one inning. And now they have two guys who are theoretically more capable of doing that, or at least wired with the stamina to do that. I agree. I don't think it's something I want to see very often, because I characterized it like this in the game recap we put up on the Good Fight, is that it's a bullpen game, but with strategy. So that's why. So it's suddenly analytics, you know, and we've seen plenty of bullpen games over the past couple of years with worse bullpens and much worse pitchers. And those have gone about as predictably as you could imagine. It's tough to make that work. I feel like you got to be, as a manager, perfect for the entire game, instead of just putting your, you know, whoever's in the rotation out there and then making adjustments based on what you're seeing in front of you. In this case, it's Gabe Kapler playing chess with the lineup. It's got a lot more moving parts and a lot more vulnerabilities, I would say. So not something I want to see all the time. Happy to see it work. Happy to see them try something to be like, look, we're facing this incredibly intimidating lineup. We're kind of, you know, without some of our weapons here. Let's piece something together. Let's do something creative. It's good to see them capable of that. It's good to see them. It's good to see it work to an extent. I think you're playing with fire, especially going up against the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. If you're doing that on a regular basis.
Well, up next, we're going to get into the Jay Bruce signing a little bit, talk about what he means to the Phillies lineup, to the Phillies bench, and how he might be utilized, and whether or not we like the deal in the first place. We'll get into the Jay Bruce stuff up next, right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So the Phillies made their first big, and I put word big in quotations, but I think adding Jay Bruce to the team is a relatively big move by the Phillies. They give up a single A infielder who projects to basically be a utility infielder at best if all goes well. So the Phillies really did not give up anything in prospect costs for Jay Bruce. And the Mariners are also going to absorb all but about $3.5 million of the $21 million left in his deal, which does run through next year. Jay Bruce is under contract through the 2020 season. According to Jason Stark, that still leaves the Phillies with about $15 million under the luxury tax for 2019. You know, this is a guy who's still just 32 years old. If you forget how young he was when he came into the league, I think he was like in his 22 or age 23 season when he first became a regular. He has 14 home runs this season, which would lead the Phillies. I mean, no Philly has that many home runs. He's hitting just .212 on the season, but he has an OPS of .816. He has 11 doubles, 28 RBIs, and 53 strikeouts and 165 at-bats for the Mariners this year. One thing, Justin, is he's always hit well at Citizens Bank Park, a career .914 OPS in 38 games, 10 home runs in 38 games at Citizens Bank Park. So how do you see the Phillies utilize it? Well, first, before we get into that, Do you like the fact, because we heard Liz in her message say she hates the Jay Bruce trade. She just doesn't like the idea of adding Jay Bruce, even if it is for peanuts and you're not paying for anything. The idea of adding Jay Bruce is not something that she is a fan of. I think it's a good move because, again, they didn't give up anything. And if you're just looking for kind of a Nick Williams upgrade, I think this is that. But, you know, what do you make of the Jay Bruce trade? Was this somebody that you feel was worth the Phillies going out and getting?
Hey, if the Phillies had acquired Gene Segura at the beginning of the offseason and then done nothing else, the Gene Segura deal would have been crazy, a lot less pleasant. And in this case, I think you're kind of looking at the same thing. Yeah, on its own, it's not the thing that's going to fix the Phillies. You know, it's not the answer to every issue we just talked about, obviously. But it's also not the only thing they're going to do. You know, only $15 million under the luxury tax, that inches them ever closer. But I think we might have seen it signaled that maybe they're not super worried about the luxury tax. It would be nice. I don't know if I totally believe that yet, but yeah, since it gets them so that much closer, it's certainly saying something in that regard. That being said, yeah, Jay Bruce isn't going to save your season. He's also just part of on the other side, on the Seattle side, Jerry DePoto's ready to tear the Mariners down again. Jeff Passan tweeted again tonight that Jay Bruce is just the start of a Seattle fire sale and that the Mariners are looking to deal every veteran on their roster. So part of it is just Jerry DePoto throwing players out the window.
He loves to do it. Yep. he loves to do it.
And so he's engaging that passion. But I think the NL is crowded with teams that are just like good, but missing a piece or need to improve in one area to become a real, real big contender. There's not a bunch of Dodgers out there. There's a lot of teams like the Phillies that are good, you know, good and good enough to feasibly picture a deep playoff run, but really need to improve moving forward. And there's only so many players who are going to help in that regard. So I think the Phillies are among a couple of teams that are about to make a bunch of moves. Now, I can understand being a little discouraged by this or at least being, untrusting, just because this does reek a lot of the Justin Bour last year.
Yeah,
of deals
that's
like
exactly
that.
That's a great point. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is that it does feel this feels like a Justin mm-hmm. Bour move, and it does feel a little underwhelming because we know they're very similar profiles. You know, Bour was mm-hmm. a kind of a big, bulky left-hander guy, could play some corner outfield and some first base,
just,
but
hit really well in Citizens Bank Park right before they acquired him. Like, yeah, I it does by the time. They had acquired Bour last year, it felt like they had gone from like very strategically moving a piece here, turning a knob there. They had gone from doing that to just like pushing buttons and like throwing stuff. Like it was just
man hit ball far, must get.
Yeah, I don't know, something, do something. And in this case, I don't think they're obviously not doing that yet. I think they see they need a power threat off the bench. They need somebody they can turn to and say, look, we need a fly ball. Like maybe it'll
Nick Williams wasn't getting it done, right. Man. That's the bottom line. Exactly. Is Nick Williams wasn't getting it done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they looked at the numbers and they were like, this guy has owned Citizens Bank Park for his entire career. And if you just broke that down year to year, you'd see some really impressive numbers. I think 2016, he absolutely destroyed the Phillies. He was a known Philly killer at that point. Putting him in a situation where he doesn't play the Phillies does weaken him, I guess, a little bit. But at the same time, he does improve that aspect of the Phillies' shortcomings on their bench. It's a good deal. I think they gave up nothing for him. So that aspect of it I don't even think about that anymore. They pretty much just have Jay Bruce now. It's not on its own. It's not exciting. It's not a deal that you're going to get psyched about. It's not the deal it's not the deal you've been waiting for, but it was probably a necessary deal and hopefully one that really that pays off, because this is a team that needs to be able to turn to someone other than their starters and say like, okay, we need a hit, you know?
Yeah. I think this says a couple of things. One, I think this says the team has lost any confidence that Nick Williams can be a guy off the bench and give them anything. You know, they don't see him as that guy. And really, Nick Williams hasn't done much in his major league career to say you can't give up on me. I mean, Nick Williams has had some good moments, mm-hmm. but he's never been a terribly consistent player. He's always had some holes in his game, and he's not built to be a guy who gets a start here and there and comes off the bench to pinch hit. He was a good pinch hitter last year, but that's because he was getting regular starts, and he would be coming off the bench in those games, you know, once or twice a week when he wasn't starting. This has been a totally different situation. So I mean, I would think the odd man out on the roster at this point is going to be Nick Williams, and probably gets sent back down to AAA. And you got to think a trade would be coming as probably as soon as possible. I mean, I think the Phillies would hope that he brings some value back to himself down in AAA. But even if he tears it up in AAA, he's going to be a throw-in in any other deal the Phillies make this year. So that's not going to be a big determining factor. This was, to me, just the Phillies saying Nick Williams wasn't good enough for this. You need a veteran guy off the bench. Some young players are able to hit off the bench, but really bench guys are typically veteran guys like Jay Bruce, and they're going to use him. I think Jay Bruce is going to be used in much of the same way that they would have used Nick Williams. You're going to have Jay Bruce getting a lot of starts against right-handed pitchers, which means Kingery's going to play third base in those situations. Franco will hit the bench. You'll have Bruce in left field and McCutchen in center. And then in starts in which you've got a lefty pitcher, you'll have Michael Franco at third base, and you'll have Kingery in center and McCutchen in left, and Bruce will be your guy off the bench, much the same way they were using Nick Williams. Some people were speculating, Justin, as to whether or not this had anything to do with Odubel Herrera's future with the team, whether or not the Phillies expected him back this year. Do you think this says anything about Odubel Herrera's future here in 2019 and beyond?
I think any adjustments they make to the outfield or anything that impacts the outfield could be about Odubel Herrera. I'm honestly not in regards to Odubel Herrera, I'm not really concerned with what the roster adjustments are as to the, I'm more concerned about what this team does in response to the situation totally. Like if this is a response to that, if this is them being like, oh yeah, we don't expect him to be back, you know, maybe. But in this case, I'm just going to wait for rock solid information as far as this goes, because this is too delicate an issue to be dancing around as far as like, oh, is Jay Bruce impacting the Odubel Herrera situation? I'd rather just know for sure that he wasn't coming back.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. And it's kind of interesting. I only ask because he is under contract for next year, but the Phillies still don't have, and that was one of the things I was seeing online was, you know, the Phillies still don't really have a center fielder on the big league roster. I mean, Andrew McCutchen is going to play center field, but, you know, I mean, that's why everybody is now watching Adam Haseley. Adam Haseley is the most watched Phillies prospect right now. Because he was tearing it up in Reading. He's gotten off to a good start in for Lehigh Valley. He does play center field. I think, you know, most folks are looking at Adam Haseley right now with a renewed interest because of the start he's gotten off to this season, and because he can play center field, and there's really nobody on the Phillies roster who can do that. That being said, you're not starting Adam. Adam Haseley's not becoming your starting center fielder in August and September for a team trying to make the playoffs.
Stretch. So, yeah. That's a hell of a stage.
Any thought that might be happening? Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, but you know, we'll just kind of let things play out. And obviously there's a trade market coming up where we're going to get into some teams here in just a second and kind of pick through their rosters and see whether or not any of these players make sense for the Phillies. I'll just before we get to it, I'll preliminarily say I was looking at center field. I don't see much out there. There's maybe one guy, and we'll get into that next, and we'll talk about Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrel next, and the trade market, which could be heating up sooner than it normally does, and explain why that might be. That's all up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So it seems as though the trade market is getting started a little bit earlier than normal this season, Justin. A lot of that is because there is no longer an August 31st waiver deadline where teams, if they didn't make any deals by July 31st, they still had the month of August. Players had to clear waivers in order for trades to get done. But we'd seen a lot of big deals get done in August. The Phillies made a couple last year with Justin Bour and Jose Bautista when they brought both of those guys in, and two killer moves that the Phillies made at the end of last year. But because there is not going to be that August period for teams to make deals, I think that's going to push everything up a little bit. And we're going to see some more action here in June on the trade market. So before we get into the trade deadline, let's talk about Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell, because we are recording this at 11 o'clock, just before 11 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday night. So in a little bit more than an hour after we're done recording this podcast, Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell's free agency status will no longer be linked to draft pick compensation. Teams won't have to give up a draft pick, and they won't have to give up the draft pick slot money that goes along with that pick in order to sign one of these two guys. And it's expected that one or both of those guys will sign pretty quickly thereafter, because we're wasting daylight here. You know, the season is ticking along here. The calendars flip each and every day, and the longer these guys sit out on the shelves, that's one fewer game a team has to use these guys. And that means more for Keuchel than for Kimbrell, because Keuchel only pitches every 5 days. So, you know, and you would imagine it's going to take a starter longer to ramp up than a relief pitcher or a closer. But it appears as though, and this is John Heyman reporting, that the Yankees are considered the favorites to sign Dallas Keuchel, with the Braves and Cardinals also in the conversation. Jim Salisbury piece that came out on Sunday morning, I think it was, doesn't appear as though the Phillies are interested in Keuchel in any way, shape, or form, not even on a one-year deal. Craig Kimbrell, different story. It looks like the Phillies are one of the teams interested in the Kimbrell market, along with the Braves, the Twins, the Rays, and a whole lot of other teams. Again, Salisbury reports the Phillies are interested in more like a one-year deal for Kimbrell. It appears as though Kimbrell kind of wants a three-year deal, maybe in the $40 to $50 million range. So do you feel like the Phillies have a good shot at getting one or both of these guys, Justin? Who do you think is going to land each of these guys?
Yeah, when I heard the Yankees being into Keuchel, suddenly that just started making too much sense. They're pretty motivated right now to improve wherever they can. And yeah, I think that's a deal that makes a lot of sense for them. But honestly, like, what if the Rays? I feel like the Rays could get a little squirrely. They got Blake Snell and Charlie Morton, and they play with the opener a whole lot, and it's been working so far. But I mean, that's a guy that could really benefit their rotation as well, considering how volatile we talked about openers being. I mean, you know, they got a system that's working, but I think stabilizing a rotation like that, especially like the Rays, they're a team that is going to have to rely on creativity to really stay in the race. You know, like, they're not a team that was supposed to be as good as they are. And I'm very intrigued by them, and I'd like to see them improve or you know, make the effort. You know, I think that's a deal that makes sense for them,
especially since they lost Tyler Glasnow to the 60-day injured list. That was a killer for them, because their rotation was looking really good with Snell, Morton, and Glasnow, and they have a kid, Yarbrough, who's been pitching really well. Losing Glasnow was really a blow for those guys. So yeah, I agree. Tampa makes a lot of sense for Keuchel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what was the main thing we brought up about Keuchel early in the offseason was that he's a ground ball pitcher, so you need to have your defense locked up. And if that's so...
yeah, you can see why the Phillies might not be interested.
So I get that, but honestly, I think that makes him more appealing to the Rays. Again, that team that Mark Simon wrote a great profile of the Rays defense not too long ago in late May, where he just went to the game and watched the defense, and he just watched the shifts, and he watched he just kept track of where the defense was, because he was talking about this is a really unseen portion of a baseball game. You're watching the batter, you're watching the ball, but he just kept his eyes on the Rays defense. And I feel like that's if that's somewhere where you're focusing in regards to acquiring Dallas Keuchel, I mean, I think that's a team that could really benefit from him. And honestly, I'd rather see him go to the Rays than the Yankees. I mean, that's just boring.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And he could keep his beard if he goes to the Rays. If he goes to the Yankees, he's going to have to shave off
his
beard.
But I mean, damn, with Kimbrell, that's where the conversation, I mean, we're basing this on reports that Braves, whoever, they're listing as being the most interested. Is like, okay, that makes sense. But that's because it makes sense with anybody. Any team could be in the mix for Craig Kimbrell. So few teams have like, okay, the bullpen works and is complete. It's not riddled by injury. And when it is, there's other guys ready to step in. Like, there's just, whose bullpen is like that? Whose? I think I asked Liz on Continued Success.
Yeah, the Brewers. That's about it. The Brewers are the only, and they probably
Josh
will go
Hayden
after Kimbrel.
Blows a save just a couple of days ago. So nobody's perfect.
Right.
I asked Liz on continued success a couple of days ago. Like, is there such a thing as a good bullpen? Has there ever been a good bullpen? Like, of course there has, but like, you know, it just seems like a mirage. So anybody could use Kimbrel. But the thing everybody brings up immediately is, are these guys even going to be the version of themselves that's going to help a team at this point? And I'd say
a fair question.
No, at least not at first. I think it's been built up too much. Everyone's seeing these guys as like just because they're available as like saviors to an extent, and they'll certainly help. Kimbrel, I think, more so than Keuchel, is going to be able to be effective more immediately. But man, yeah, it's hard to imagine that with this much time having passed, and obviously they're doing what they can to stay in shape. But like when you're not logging innings, and it's June 2nd, then it's like, man, yeah, they're going to have to get back in their grooves, I think, in a hurry. And that could be tough to watch at first. So adjustments will have to be made. But like point being, Kimbrel could fit on any roster and make it better. I mean, he's the best closer of his generation, yeah. I think. So, yeah, he should have a job. He should have had a job by now, and he could get a job pretty much anywhere in the league.
Yeah, and if I were the Phillies, I would give Kimbrel a 3-year deal.
Absolutely. Three years, I'm not afraid of a 3-year deal. Like, if they want to throw a 1-year deal at him, and he's the one who was rumored to be like, I want a 6-year deal. If they want to throw a 1-year deal at him, why bother? I feel like he's going to have better offers out there, or more appealing offers. Yeah. One thing these guys... go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think he'll get a 3-year deal from somebody.
Mm, me too.
Yeah, and I think... that makes too much sense for the Phillies. You know, I mean, he could help. He could help. I think it'll take Kimbrel less time to get ramped up, because you only need him for one inning. You don't need him to go five or six innings. And, you know, I think getting Kimbrel in the bullpen means more than getting Keuchel, would be more helpful than getting Keuchel in the starting
rotation.
Totally
agree.
I mean, it seems silly to me to stick to a 1-year, and maybe the Phillies will open it up and be willing to go to 3 years or something like that. But I don't envision the Phillies getting either guy, Justin. I fully expect us to walk away from this without getting either one.
Mm-hmm. I think this front office puts a little more thought into it, and it just seems like they're not going to go for the obvious answers that really only make sense in the broadest sense of like, oh, well, the bullpen's bad, let's get Kimbrel. The rotation needs help, let's get Keuchel. Especially like we're saying with Keuchel, I feel like that's not going to happen. Kimbrel maybe, but I feel like they're not going to offer him the deal he wants to see at this point.
What do you think they need more, a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher?
That is a good question.
Because I keep going back and forth on this. And I guess it depends on the day. It depends on which part of the team is blown up that day. Whether it's a starter that couldn't give you 4 innings, whether it's a Jared Eichhoff start where he gives up a bunch of homers, or whether it's a bullpen where Vince Velasquez has an ERA over 10 as a reliever. And you're running Edgar Garcia out there, who unfortunately has just not pitched all that well since getting called up. And Yaxel Rios is out there throwing important innings. I mean, that's not what you want to see out there. And, you know, I love what Hector Neris has done for the Phillies this year. He still makes me nervous in the ninth inning of a big game. Mm-hmm. I would feel more secure with Craig Kimbrel pitching the ninth inning of a late September game in which the Phillies led by one run.
Man, when's the last time we had the luxury of feeling safe in a closer's arms, frankly?
Yeah, it really was. It really was Brad Lidge in 2008, man.
Brad Lidge. I mean, hey, Papelbon, I felt pretty safe with a lot.
Yeah.
Not in the dugout, but on the mound, I certainly.
Right, on the mound, you felt very safe. Yeah. Well, obviously, I don't think they're going to get Keuchel or Kimbrel. I know you don't either. So let's take a look at some of these teams around baseball who the Phillies could potentially do deals with. They just did a deal with Seattle for Jay Bruce. An MLB Trade Rumors piece indicated that the Kansas City Royals were ready to start dealing from a team that has the second worst record in Major League Baseball. They're not going to give up any of their young stars, so a guy like Hunter Dozier is not in the realm of possibility. But as I was looking over their roster, we'll look at the Royals, then let's look at a couple other teams that I identified as, I think, certain sellers here over the next few weeks. And if we're looking at the Royals, a couple of the names that I picked out, Justin, were Whit Merrifield, obviously, would be a phenomenal ad. He plays just about every position. He can play some center field, but he's mostly corner outfield, infield. He can play pretty much every. He's a Scott Kingery who can play all the different defensive positions really well. He would cost a lot. He would probably cost you Spencer Howard. He would probably cost you Alec Bohm or something like that. Plus, you know, not both of those guys, but one of those guys and some other top prospects. He would not come cheap because he's also signed for, you know, for a number of years. He is 30, so he's a little bit on the older side, but, you know, he didn't really get going until, you know, he's like a Jose Bautista. He didn't really get going and become this kind of player until his late 20s. So, you know, Whit Merrifield would obviously be a great ad, would help the team tremendously, but, you know, I don't know exactly where he would play. If we're looking at pure center fielders, Billy Hamilton, I think, would be an interesting addition. He wouldn't help your bats off the bench, but he would play a pretty mean defensive center field. You know, he's got a lot of holes in his game, so I don't know.
The positives are clear with Billy Hamilton, but yeah, I feel like you talk about infuriating hitters. He would just kind of add to that for sure. Like, that's not a guy you're going to see the kind of high numbers that put people at ease just because he can run down a ball in center field. But, you know, it depends. Maybe the Phillies are going to need that more down the line. I actually have a question for you. At this point in the game here, where the Phillies have traded away Sixto Sanchez for JT Realmuto, a deal I don't think any one of us would take back, and the team clearly throwing it into win now mode, we're talking about all the trades they could possibly make with teams that are looking to rebuild, you know, last place teams that are looking to get started again and restock their farm system. How much does Matt Klentak care about prospects at this point? Because we talked about Sixto Sanchez as a guy who was like their last big valuable prospect to trade away, and they traded him away. Now, with a part of the season's underway for some of these minor leaguers, we're seeing more promising things. I don't think Adam Haseley's going anywhere for the reasons we've talked about, that the outfield has some holes in it, and they just promoted him to Lehigh Valley, and there's a story coming together there. But guys like Bohm, guys like Howard, I mean, we know a little bit more about them, and clearly guys like Jerry DePoto is it still Dayton Moore in Kansas City? Is that still going?
I think so, but I couldn't. Don't hold me to that. But I think,
you know, they're starting
is.
to salivate over guys like that. I don't know. Does Matt Klentak really? If they're in win now mode, don't they care less about the prospects they have?
It is Dayton Moore still, by the way. I think he. It's a great question because. I think that the team has to remember how things fell apart during the last run. You know, I think that has to be a part of the calculus. Right. I don't think they can trade Spencer Howard, Alec Bohm, or Adam Haseley. I think they have to hold on to all three of those guys at this point. Because, I mean, Alec Bohm could be your third baseman next year if he continues this way. If they don't want to go out and pay the money for an Anthony Rendon or something like that, Bohm could be that kind of guy. He's tearing it up in Clearwater. He'd have to jump some levels here this year, but he's going to get the call to Reading at some point soon. And then once you hit Double-A, you're not far from the majors. So I could see Alec Bohm being a part of this team in 2020, and he's you know, the number three pick in the draft a couple years ago. You know, Adam Haseley, again, because of the center field thing and how good he's gotten. Spencer Howard is a guy who could be a top of the rotation starter. I think one of the reasons they felt comfortable dealing Sixto Sanchez was because of Howard's emergence as a potential top of the rotation starting pitcher, and they felt, okay, we can move Sanchez for, I mean, they move Sanchez for maybe the best catcher in baseball. So, you know, if you're going to move somebody of that caliber, you want it to be for somebody who's the best at their position. I don't see anything like that on the trade market here. You know, so I agree with you. I don't know how much they're going to hold on to prospects here because they are in win now mode. But I think Matt Klentak and the Phillies front office and you know, player personnel people understand that they can't empty the farm system at this point.
I mean, you can throw Jake Shiners for Jay Bruce's all day, but that's what it gets you.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you give up nothing, but you're, you know, I'm not calling Jay Bruce nothing, but like that's kind of the level you're going to get back. And that's not going to be
I mean, Adonis Medina, I think, is like he's like their number four prospect. I would feel comfortable moving him in a deal for Ken Giles or for Madison Bumgarner or something like that. Or, you know, maybe if the Indians make somebody like Carlos Carrasco available, I think
having to make a deal like that to get Giles or Carrasco. Damn it.
Yeah. I mean, I know I'd be, especially Carrasco as a starter. Ken Giles, I don't think would require something like that. But if it required giving up Adonis Medina for Giles, I would have Medina basically as my show pony and just be like, here's our guy that we're willing to deal. This is our best prospect we're willing to give out. And if you can't get any bite, if you have to end up getting somebody like Mike Minor from the Rangers or something like that, you know, then that's fine with me, you know. But I mean, there's a few, like the White Sox could look to deal Alex Colome, great, you know, effective closer for the back of the bullpen. The Tigers could make Matt Boyd, who's a really good young starter, available. You know, there's some guys out there, you know, I mean, and Bumgarner, you know, Zach Greinke, you know, these are guys who are probably going to fetch some team's second or third best prospect. I'm not sure I'm giving up anything better than Medina for any of those.
Yeah,
guys.
It's kind of interesting. We're looking at an American League that is defined a lot by just space between the good teams and the bad teams. And there's a lot of space. And then the NL, where there's just a lot of teams that are like pretty good, looking to get a little better. And having all the players swap places, I don't know if it's going to wind up making the differences teams want to see. What about the Reds? You see anybody on the Reds you feel like mining them for? Who would you give up for Sonny Gray or Tanner Roark?
Nothing. Yeah, that's the thing. But, you know, what's funny is the Reds have pitched so well this year. I mean, Luis Castillo has been great for them. Descalfani has been good for them. But, yeah, I don't like Sonny Gray. I mean, I don't like Tanner Roark. I mean, Luis Castillo I would trade for. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I looked at, but I just would they really let him go?
He's not
going for anything less than the guys
we're
talking
about.
No, he's
not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's
And the Reds are an interesting team because, I mean, they have played much better than their record would indicate this year. I don't know if that means they'll be able to, you know, I don't know if that means they'll be able to track down, you know, the Cubs or the Brewers, who, you know, I think are the best teams in that division. And you know, the Pirates are playing really well. The Cardinals have a lot of talent there on that team. So I don't know if the Reds, I didn't really look at the Reds because I don't know that they're sellers. It's amazing. Like their run differential, they have like the fourth or fifth best run differential in the National League. And they're just 6.5 games out of first. So I think like 4 games under 500. I think the Reds are going to try and hang on. They have a run differential of plus 36, which is second best in their division, which is crazy for a team that's 27-32. But their run differential is actually better than the Phillies.
You and I talked off mic briefly about Marcus Stroman on the Blue Jays, looking not the worst this year. But again, he's looking at his numbers. It just makes me reconsider the question based on what we just talked about. Who really is the best player the Phillies can acquire for who we're assuming they're willing to give up? Because Stroman's putting up numbers that I feel like take you out of Adonis territory.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think Bumgarner. I don't think Bumgarner would cost more than Medina. I'll put it this way. If you're a major league team and you're giving up a prospect better than Adonis Medina for Madison Bumgarner, I think you're making a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see Bumgarner on this team, but I'm not feeling comfortable giving up anything more than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carlos Carrasco, you know, would be a guy that I would think about, you know. I mean, there's not a lot. I'm not seeing a lot of impact, you know.
A lot of exasperated sighs in this.
Yeah,
discussion.
A lot of exasperated. And that's why I think what we're going to see here is the Phillies go hard after relievers.
Yeah.
I think there's plenty of good relievers available. The Giants have a lot of good relievers. Will Smith, Tony Watson, Mark Melanson, all good relievers. You know, Danny Duffy from the Royals, I haven't looked at his numbers are okay this year, but you know, he's also a guy I'm worried could implode. Mike Minor's numbers, I'll tell you, you know, we kind of made fun of the Mike Minor rumors a little while back, but Mike Minor is actually having a pretty good season for the Rangers right now, and he that might be that might be a fit. He was linked to the Phillies earlier in the season. I'm pulling up Mike Minor's numbers right now, just to kind of give a quick glimpse. Hang on 1 second here. He's got a 2.74 ERA in 12 starts this year. He's striking out 9.5 batters per nine, only walking 2.8. FIP of 3.44. He's been very good this year and for the Rangers. So he might be, and he's a left-hander, he might be my target at this point because I think you could get him for Adonis Medina plus.
You know, Madison Bumgarner has 10.5 strikeouts to walks when pitching in Citizens Bank Park in his career.
Does he
just
really?
Out of curiosity had to check that out. Just because I feel like when you said Bumgarner, I was like, of course, it was always going to come down to Bumgarner. We've been talking about him for a long time as a potential trade target for the Phillies. And frankly, if you were going by talk generated about potential targets, it would be Bumgarner and Minor as the most realistic options. And at this point, I do think that they're the most realistic options. I think that's if you're looking for the Phillies specifically to improve their rotation, I think that's pretty much the upper tier, in quotes, talent that this team can acquire. That's probably what they're equipped to get based on what they have to offer. So, you know, look at those numbers, break those guys down, because I feel like those are your best bets to additions to the Phillies rotation.
But that's why I think the Phillies should really make an aggressive offer for Craig Kimbrel, because if you make an aggressive free agent offer for Craig Kimbrel, all it costs you is money.
Yeah.
And then you can use your prospects to go after Bumgarner or a different starting pitcher.
I think that's a great idea.
Because I think you have to add one of both. You know, I think the Phillies need a starter and a reliable relief pitcher. And if you're going to try and acquire both of those through trade, maybe you can double up with the Giants and get Bumgarner and Will Smith. But that's going to cost you a lot. You know, that's going to cost you. That's probably going to cost you, Alec.
And not every other team you're trading with is going to be the Mariners, who are just going to be like, yeah, and you can just have all our money too.
Right.
And whoever. Yeah. And then they're like walk halfway out the door before they realize they forgot to get, you know, the prospect that they came for. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah, for a team like the Braves that have a much deeper farm system and much more enticing prospects, they can make a better offer than that.
And they should.
You know, so, they absolutely should. And so that's why I think the Phillies should go after Kimbrel right now. Make a three-year, $45 million offer for Craig Kimbrel and see if he bites. And then you can just focus on the
I think
starter,
with the win now, this team, or the front office should also have, you know, one eye on, all right, let's not blow up the farm system. We're not there yet as far as win now mode. But when it comes to money, this team should be playing very, very loosely. Like you said, if that's all you're giving up, then that's something this team has. And that's how they've made their adjustments. That's how they got to this point. They didn't have their Juan Soto or Ronald Acuna show up, and they were like, you know what? All right, we're gonna have to buy that talent. We're gonna have to just do that, and they did it. And they have a pretty great lineup right now. So yeah, I think that's the best move. I think we fixed the Phillies. Pay for Craig Kimbrel, and then make a deal for the best guy you can get for what you have.
Our work here is done. All right.
You're
we
welcome.
Fixed the Phillies, Justin. Fantastic. Yeah. Good. Please. You can send any thank you cards, care of the good fight.
I wonder what Matt Klentak's handwriting
any
looks
final?
Like. Just courier new, right. But he writes it by hand.
Oh my goodness. That's talent. Any final thoughts before we wrap up here, buddy?
You know, I enjoy and agree with the defensive positivity I've seen from the Phillies fan camp after this weekend. I haven't seen a whole lot of people get completely downtrodden, you know, right after the game. Obviously that's a raw emotional time after losing three straight on just a crappy weekend. And they lose that final game 8-0. Like that sucks. But for the most part, the general vibe I'm getting is that people aren't giving up. They know it's still early and this team is good. So getting dumped by the best team in the league, you know, disappointing, but I feel like we can move forward knowing this team is going to make some adjustments and be better by, you know, maybe even next week.
Yep. Like you said, there's lots of time this season to get better. And I'm looking forward to getting the Dodgers in Philadelphia. I think it's going to be a much different series next time around. And the schedule lightens up a little bit here as the Phillies travel next to San Diego to take on the Padres for a three-game series. It'll be Aaron Nola, who's pitching so much better now that the weather has warmed up. He's been fantastic over his last six starts. He'll get Eric Lauer who has a 4.45 ERA. Another left-hander the Phillies are facing. Phillies are 6-10 against left-handed starters this year. Tuesday night, you get Jared Eichhoff against Chris Paddock. Paddock, a great young rookie hurler for the Padres. He's a tough nut to crack. So the Padres seem to have the pitching matchup there. And then you have Jake Arrieta against left-handed pitcher Joey Lucchese in the game on Wednesday afternoon. And of course, this will be Bryce Harper versus Manny Machado this week.
Well, they're
this week,
fight.
Justin, and we'll be able to see for ourselves. Yeah, maybe we'll have a fight, and maybe we'll be able to see for ourselves the pure laziness of Manny Machado up close and in person.
Let's boo him. It doesn't matter why.
Yeah, let's boo Manny Machado. We can feel free to boo him now. All right, folks, so that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin Clue, and of course, we'll be looking forward to hearing from Liz again in the very near future. Folks, if you haven't done so, head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon for some bonus content there. It's at Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. I'll have a new video of Cards on the Table up there for you in the next day or two. If you haven't left a rating and a review at the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, I'd ask you to please do that for us. And that does help other Phillies fans find the podcast, helps us grow help move up those Apple Podcast rankings. Folks, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.